story, new paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com. We also archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we are also linked to our guest's website. We'll be giving you the link to today's guest in just a moment. We encourage you to check them out and see what they're all about, get further information as far as what we'll be talking about today, which is going to be very, very interesting. I can say that I am unfamiliar, very much so, unfamiliar with the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth waves. Well, we're going to skip all that. We're going to go right to the ninth wave because that's going to be the main focus of our conversation with our guest, who is also the author of The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, The Quantum Evolution of Consciousness. Carl Johan Kuhlman, PhD, is my guest. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
As am I. This is, to me, rather fascinating, especially in light of what we have been learning, especially in regards to the issue that a lot of people are into these days, quantum physics and trying to understand the universe and why we're here and how we're here and all of those things. And just trying to put it all into perspective, if you will, to figure out what's important and what's not important. And I think that's probably the biggest thing for most of us is understanding the reality in which we live. And I'm hoping that you'll be able to help us figure out why you and others are in this context, because we're going to start here. I think this is appropriate. Why you're following the ninth wave. And I have to say that conjures up images in my mind of one of the Star Trek movies where there's this one fellow by the name of Soren who is following this wave that's traveling across the universe called the Nexus, and he wants to get into its path so that's where he can go. I am guessing that is not quite what we are looking at here in terms of the ninth wave. Let's describe what the ninth wave is for us.
Yeah. Well, it might be a little bit related to that, because I do think that these are waves that are emanating from the center of the universe, from the source of the universe, and I'm also convinced that these waves were really what the ancient peoples of our planet were describing when they were talking about different eras, different worlds. And I would say also that a very common ancient symbol of these waves would be the serpent, and especially since the people that really charted these waves with an amazing precision would be the ancient Mesoamericans, the Maya especially, and they would talk about something called the plumed serpent, which I understand simply as their way of describing a wave. It's not very easy when you start thinking about it. If you don't have modern programs to plot up sine waves and these kind of mathematical functions, how would you symbolize a wave? Well, I think the snake, the serpent, is really one of the most obvious symbols that would be used. And I think ancient peoples, they were really in tune with these waves, and there is so much descriptions in from different parts of the world of that there was a creation process. They saw themselves as being part of a creation, and one of the metaphors that we know of fairly widely is the biblical version that is saying that God created the world in 7 days and 6 nights. which is really then, in my way of looking upon it, it's a way of describing one of these particular waves. So the waves is then something that I will base myself primarily from the Maya when I go to. And the reason is that waves are phenomena that have frequencies. Waves are phenomena that develop over time. There's a wave front that moves. And with that wave front, changes will happen. Like this person you mentioned in this Star Trek, that he wanted to be connect to a wave. And this is exactly what we are doing today, at least some of us. The Mayan calendar system, I would say, is really primarily a system describing the activation, the sequential activation of nine different waves. And this all goes back to what we, with modern terminology, talk about as the Big Bang, when creation started, the beginning of time. And the beginning of time meant the activation of the first, the lowest of these particular waves, the waves with the lowest frequency, or if you so like, the longest period. And in most Mayan cities from ancient times, you will find that at the center, they will have a big pyramid that's built in nine levels, nine stories. And not every town or city would have it, but the famous ones like Palenque, Chichen Itza, Tikal, and others like that, they would have that as the centerpiece of the city, a pyramid built in nine terraces. And a way of looking at that is that these terraces each reflect a certain frame of consciousness, a certain level of consciousness, that since they are activated during the course of history or the history of the universe, they are put on top of each other because they sort of added sequentially to each other. And the real novelty in terms of what the Mayan calendar offers is the fact that late in the year 2011, the top level of these nine waves was activated. And for all what we know, this is the wave that brings the possibility for humanity to go into a state you might call of unity consciousness. And going into that state and acting accordingly, seeing everything, how everything is connected with everything else, that is really then tantamount to being in resonance with the ninth wave, of connecting with this wave. Because the lower, and why is that important? Well, I think, first of all, it is the highest wave, it's the highest level of consciousness on the Mayan pyramid. So in that sense, it's the top level, it's the highest level of consciousness that the universe offers. And so it then transcends, you might say, the lower waves that usually have some kind of a dualistic, they have some kind of a filters as to how human beings perceive reality. And by developing a resonance with the ninth wave, we are starting to get beyond that. We're seeing another kind of reality, and a reality that's not based on separation, a reality that is not based on duality. And that's why I consider it's a great tool that the ancient Maya, in fact, have now makes possible for us to see how do we relate to this wave that recently was activated? Can we see that it has an effect in our lives, or is it not the case? I mean, it's not something I can speak for everyone. I suspect that it's a small minority, certainly less than 1%, that are beginning to resonate with this particular wave. But nonetheless, I think this is the highest wave, that it is the wave that gives us the destiny of humanity, the framework of the future, I would say, and that's why, that's why I think it's important to let people know that this wave exists and that it's possible to access, and that it gives it's a kind of a tool for us to align ourselves with what seems to be the destiny of humanity.
Well, now you say that this was what sort of discovered, if you will, within the Mayan writings and or the Mayan calendar.
Yeah.
You said that this wave was, and you used the word activated, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Who activated it?
I think when you look to this system, it's not, it is activated by a mathematical pattern, you might say. You know, I personally would like to think that it is the divine that is behind this whole pyramid of activation of different levels. But it's not like somebody sits there and says, well, now it's time to activate this. It follows a mathematical pattern where waves of higher and higher frequency have been activated, and it just happens. You know, it just happens, and exactly why, what caused it? That's at least is beyond me. Even though I suspect that the source of all of these waves is what we may refer to as the divine or God or mm-hmm. something like that.
Now, the Mayans did indeed write about the first 8 waves. Is that correct?
Well, to say that they wrote about it would be a little bit strong.
Or left information, shall we put it that way?
Yes. I mean, to begin with, these pyramids in 9 steps are there for us to climb if we like and experience if we like. Mm-hmm. But it's also something that is very significant in this regard. And this is an inscription from the Maya that's been found. It was found fairly recently. It was found in the 90s, and it was drawn to the public attention sometime around 2005 or so, which is called the Tortuguero Monument Number 6. And the reason that this is an interesting inscription is that it is, in fact, the only inscription from ancient times from the Maya that talked about what would happen at the time of the shift in 2012, because there was a tremendous amount of rumors circulating a couple of years ago as to what this shift would mean, most of those rumors were simply made up, you would say, of modern people who tried to make sense of why they had charted a shift taking place at that particular time. But regardless, there is one inscription from ancient times, and only one, but there is one. And it is remarkable, actually, that they did write one inscription about 1,500 years ago about what would happen in our particular time. So let me tell you what that particular inscription says.
Please.
Because it's really relevant for us to understand this. What it says is that they talked about some kind of an entity, a deity, or they would probably refer to it as a creation god, that they talked about as Bolon Yokti Ku. And Bolon in the Mayan language means nine. And Yokte presumably means supports or steps. In other words, like the step pyramids or support pyramids that they would build. That deity, that nine support deity, nine level deity, would at this point in time appear in its full regalia. Now that's what it says. That's how the people that are decoding these ancient hieroglyphs are saying. And it's a fairly strong consensus among these decoders that this is what it's saying. And the way to understand this, as I understand it anyway, is that the full regalia of this nine entity of nine levels to be witnessed and to be activated, that means that the last of these nine steps would be activated, the ninth wave. So here we have something that you might say this is a little bit of a cryptic language. I would agree on that, even though I'm convinced that this is the way to understand it, that it's a nine-level creation that we're in. And what happened a few years ago was that the last of these nine levels became activated. The full regalia of this entity of nine levels of creation became apparent. So that's something that we actually have from ancient Maya, and remarkably something that they found important enough to 1,500 years ago write an inscription about. Just imagine that you and I or I would write something about something that would happen in the year 3,500 or something like that. We wouldn't do that, but they would do that for the reason that they didn't make any sort of prediction about any kind of a physical event that would happen, but they looked upon reality from a metaphysical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And from that metaphysical perspective, they could accurately say that this is the time when all of this entity of nine levels will be active and so forth. And that's the reality that we are now starting to live in.
This, to me, is extremely fascinating because it's what you're talking about as we continue on with Carl Johan Kalman is the issue that faces all of humanity. And I say faces because there are going to be those who are going to, with open arms, embrace the rising consciousness of the planet. And there are also going to be those who are going to resist it with every fiber of their being because they don't believe, for whatever reason, that we need to be going anywhere but even backward. I remember, Carl, that when I was working for a Christian radio station back in the 80s and 90s, that they all wanted to go back and live the lifestyle of the 50s as if that was a great time. I don't know, because I wasn't born until 1960.
Yeah.
And so there are going to be people today, and we're hearing them on the public stage, who are just, I mean, I am just, I'm astounded at the mentality that that is able to maintain that level of consciousness even to this day. Here we are in you've heard the phrase time and time again. Come on, we're in the 21st century. Let's grow up. And some people, they just don't want to grow up. I mean, and again, this is the other aspect of it, I think, that I don't know if you'd agree with this or not. They don't have to. It's their choice. We're not here forcing anything on anybody. As a matter of fact, it's kind of like the air that we breathe. There was a most fascinating documentary, and I really wish I could find it again, that spoke of on the molecular level, the air that we breathe. And they were actually able to measure the age of the various particles that are floating through the air. And I don't mean the pollutants. I'm talking about the actual particles. And they gave them a name.
Wow.
And they said that some of the particles ranged in age anywhere from the present day back hundreds of thousands of years. And this was the fascinating thing that they threw out that really blew my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The oxygen that we are breathing today is the same molecular material that was breathed by the greats, whether they be avatars. But they mentioned specifically, just as a point of reference, we were breathing in the same molecules that Jesus and Muhammad and the great gurus, Buddha, and on and on down through. And yes, of course, there's the other side of it. And I thought, wow, you want to talk about they talk about 6 degrees of separation. You want to talk about no separation? That connects us down through the millennia.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like these waves that the Mayans have alluded to in their information, shall we say. Mm-hmm. I'm only familiar primarily with the calendar they left behind. And my wife has made probably one of the most interesting observations of the individual, I'm sure that it was more than one, but who was working on it. And at one point, finally said, that's it, I'm done. I've had enough, and walked away. That's why the calendar ended where it did. And I thought that was a rather humorous way of looking at it.
Yeah.
But we are talking about not just a mental shift, but we're talking about a physical as well as emotional and spiritual shift planetarily. And I'm sure that you would agree that we all still need to keep working at what we're doing, because this wave is here. And I'm curious as to whether this wave has a continual, shall we say, washing over of the planet and of the people, or if it's just one pass and we're done and we then experience the effects thereafter. What's the best way for you to describe the wave itself?
Yeah.
In relation to us and the Earth.
Yes. Yes. So there are many things here I'd like to comment on, and I absolutely agree with you. What you're pointing out, the choice that we're having and may make. It is a free choice. And the nine waves of the Mayan calendar system, they relate to this choice, and they relate very much to the very fact that there are different groups of people on our planet, some of whom might be quite eager and willing to completely change their way of being, their spirituality, and their openings to unity. Whereas at the same time, there are groups of people that are very much into a judgmental duality, into religious fanaticism and many other ways of looking at reality. And because if we take this, what you might say the fundamental religious approach, it really comes out of another wave. 5,000 years ago was activated the sixth wave, what the Maya would talk about as the long count. And that's a wave that, when that was formed, civilization started on our planet. In other words, the pyramids were built, the first cities in Mesopotamia and Egypt, and the Indus Valley came from this particular time. And people, you might say, they download a mind. And but this mind is a mind of duality. It's the mind that in the Bible is described as the tree of knowledge of good and evil. It's a mind that separates and sort of, it's not unity. It's a mind of duality of seeing some things through the light and other things through the dark. And this downloading that mind or being in resonance with that particular wave, that creates a certain kind of person, a person that usually has a judgmental approach to others, and sometimes even an approach of dominance and conquering nature and many other things. That particular wave started 5,000 years ago. Then came another wave, the seventh wave, that brought industrialism. It's the one that was activated in 1755, and you might say it also created this particular nation of the United States. Came with that particular wave. It was a new kind of mentality that was activated in that time. And then came the eighth wave, which is more recent. Came in 1999, and it sort of has brought all this, you might say, robotization, smart technology, social media, et cetera, and but also, what I think we should be aware of that particular wave has brought a tremendous inequality on the economic in the economic world that we haven't fully seen the consequences of it yet, but there are people that are starting to, I would say, see the consequences. I just recently read a book by Martin Ford, The Rise of the Robots, basically talking about how this new mind that is really coming out of that wave, that's my word, of course. He doesn't talk about this from the Mayan perspective, but he just looks upon how this robotization that happens right before our eyes now is really beginning to threaten all the jobs of the future and so forth. And we'll be facing some difficulties. And also, he points out that particular this whole smart technology is really strongly concentrating the wealth in the hands of very few people. Now, since I have a basic faith in this creation. And a faith in the basic idea that, you know, a lot of the religions would have that, you know, it's been a process going from a unity that existed before civilization arrived, and then we've been going through a long period of separation, and now there is the possibility of going back to unity. But that requires then that we transcend all of these dualistic waves that I enumerated, and that we develop this kind of a resonance with the ninth wave, which is the one that will allow people to go into the state of consciousness where they do not only see duality, where the filter through which they look at reality is not dualistic, but it sees the unity and tries to, and the people that have created this kind of a resonance, they will also start to seek to create a world that is consistent with unity. And it's a sequence, in other words, of waves that have been sequentially activated, each with a higher frequency. The highest frequency is the ninth wave.
Right.
That is the one that is shifting with the highest, most common frequently of all these waves.
Now, before we take our break, is this wave continually passing through, or has it only made one pass and it moves on to the rest of the universe?
I say that, I think this wave is here for us to stay. I think it will be, once it was activated, as all the waves, they continue endlessly. And so they will be here for us to resonate with. But we'll have to make the choice, I think, and we have to. They're all here. We're living in sort of a multidimensional possibility world, but it's up to us to choose the possibility that I believe leads to the future, which is the unity consciousness.
Well, I myself, even on this program, have discussed the. perplexed nature when it comes to this whole aspect of dualism, when I'm aware of what it says in many of the ancient wisdom teachings down through the centuries, even the millennia, that talks about the oneness from where we came from and the oneness or unity where we're going to.
Yep.
And my question is, then what is the point of this duality? And I even add to that, specifically here in the United States, where for the last 40 or 50 or more years, we've been trying to, as the phrase has been used, export, if you will, democracy, that freedom, liberty, and justice for all, when seen in the light of this unity from the ninth wave, those constructs, as I'll use that term, become irrelevant. They're neither good nor bad.
Yeah.
They are irrelevant to this concept of unity. And I'm noticing, too, even at the age of 17, when I began my search, I did the basic logical processing, for example, of our economic system. You know, where, you know, I'm 17 and I'm going to be 18 and I may go to college, I may go find a job, and my my job life begins, okay? And I'm going to start at a certain level, whatever the minimum wage might be or whatever I'm going to start me at. And let's just say, for the sake of argument, I'm going to stay there for 20, 30, 40 years. I'm hoping that I get a bump up in pay every year or two or something like that, right? Well, how does the company continue to pay me more each year or two and yet stay in business? And if it does it with all its employees who hang around, then they've got to raise their rates. Subsequently, and radio being what it is, they would have to then increase their rates to their programmers and advertisers who have to pay more for advertising. So they've got to raise the rates of their products and services, and their employees also want more. So what I began to see was that concept wasn't sustainable. How are you going to keep something like that going? I mean, you're basically, what you're talking about is wages and prices are going to go through the roof. And then that which you earn really has no value at all whatsoever. I thought, and then Now here we are in the 21st century, and we're running into that same issue. They want to raise the minimum wage all over the country in different parts of the country. And I'm not opposed to that as a just measure for work done. But mm-hmm. it's like we almost have to give up our individual I've seen this in, for example, sports, professional sports, where there are some players who want to have a winning team so badly, they're willing to take a pay cut in order for the team to achieve the goal of the championship that year, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Then to me, that's the kind of consciousness that's beginning to come in, saying, you know what? Yeah, I need mine, but we need ours. And I'm seeing that starting to happen, where people are saying, you know, yeah, I'm an individual. Yes, I have to feed my family. But what happens if I keep asking for more and more, and the company says, we can't afford to do it anymore. Either A, I got to let you go, or B, we got to shut down the plant, and everybody loses. That kind of thing.
Yeah. We have to think in new ways.
In new ways, indeed. We're going to come back and talk more. I would also like to discuss the aspects of your book, The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, The Quantum Evolution of Consciousness. We'll also give out your website. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a Newer World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. We are talking with Carl Johan Kalman, and he is the author of The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, The Quantum Evolution of Consciousness. I'm just utterly intrigued by what he is sharing with us here on the program, as well as what I have been able to bring up from his website. I'm actually looking at a calendar going back to February of this year through, and it's showing the wave as it passes through the days, the weeks, and the months, and so forth. It's broken into day and night, which basically encompasses days in our concept. But when you're talking about this ninth wave, we'll maybe get some description of that. And we will also talk about the other concepts that he is bringing up in terms of the global mind. And Carl, thank you so much for staying with us. This is fascinating stuff, and dealing with how the global mind drives the evolution of both consciousness and civilization. And it's one of those things. See, I don't know whether I'm living in the past or the universe is sort of sending me back to the music that I listened to as I was growing up, you know, primarily in my teens, back in the mid-70s when John Denver was a big deal and so forth. But I'm going back and I'm re-listening to his music, and the lyrics for me resonate more today than they did then, in terms of the message that he was trying to bring, not just about how he talks about, you know, the wild things of this earth and how we all want to see things. We all want to be wild and free. And as long as we still have the wilderness and the wildlife, you know, we can continue to have that experience. And also the concept of the unity, that it's all or none. I've used the analogy, Carl, that we are looking for the new ways of living. Okay. The old ways do not work. Just look around you.
Yeah.
And the new ways of living are what we're trying to find. And what we have metaphorically created a lifeboat. It will hold 7.5 billion people. There is only one proviso. In order to come aboard, you must be willing to let go of the old ways of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you, in light of the ninth wave, is how do we do that?
Yeah. You know, that is the I believe you have to have a guidance. The way I look upon it is that reality is so complex. The especially our current times are so complex that it's very difficult as an individual to know exactly what am I to do, how am I to deal with my situation, and how can I be part of a process of that that brings back the world to unity. And so I believe that part of that question is to develop like a relationship to what I would say the personal divine. And this is not like going into some religion that tells you that this is the way God thinks or and so forth and it gives you a set of rules as to how to behave. Because those kind of rules are usually coming from the waves, the dualistic waves of the Mayan pyramid. But it is still, I think we need to have that kind of a, develop that kind of a connection to the all that is, who has the complete overview that we as our minds are too limited to guide us. We have to gain spiritual guidance, and spiritual guidance that takes the whole reality we're living in, our whole situation into account, and can point us in the way that is best for us, but not only best for us, single individuals looked upon as separate from the rest of creation. That's what we normally tend to do unless we have developed a kind of unity consciousness, unless we have developed a direct personal relationship to spirit that guides us. So I think this component is very, very important. But I also want to emphasize that this is something that has to come from our own individual hearts. And my own view of many of the old religions that were created in the what I call the sixth wave is that they are shaped by another mind than we should be listening to at the current time. Those religions were shaped by dualistic minds, and we see that in very much in the Abrahamic religions that very much tend to sort of separate people into good and evil and give all these kind of rules that somebody has downloaded, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I believe we have to create this relationship with the divine, each one of us, and get the guidance from that. That is the truth that I believe is the relevant one for us. But that's when the ninth wave comes in, because you know if the ninth wave is a wave without filters, where our mind doesn't have any filters, then that's the same thing as being open to the all that is. And so if we are creating that kind of a contact with the divine to guide us, then we will find that our life follows these kind of wave pattern that the ninth wave is giving us. We will see that there are certain periods when we have wind on the back, and these are usually followed by times when we have to deal with many aspects of ourselves that we have inherited from these lower levels of the pyramid, the levels of duality, the levels of filters separating ourselves not only from the divine, but separating ourselves from each other, from nature, etc. Just to fill out, I mean, I'm also a great admirer of John Denver, and I can. It's easy to, you know, I agree. I just recently saw a program about him and his life and his music, and it sort of it really fits very much into these ways of doing it. That I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's a transformation of ourselves, but part of that transformation is a transformation of our relationship to nature, because it comes back to a question that you raised, and why was the duality to begin with? And that is what my book, The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, tries to address. Basically what it's saying, among many other things, is that the dualistic mind is something we it's a wave that we may downloaded for 5,000 years essentially, and that the duality that imposed on us or created in us as a possibility of looking at the reality, that duality was also the very duality that created this creative mind, this mind that created mathematics, that created the architectures, calendars, etc., everything that we associate with civilization came out of that mind, a dualist mind, because without a dualist mind, you don't have the mental capacities to do so. To create a civilization. And so it seems to me that the part of the cosmic or divine plan for our existence includes this civilization that we've been creating for 5,000 years. And it has, you know, most of us still want to have that. It's mm-hmm. just that it really has also had many downsides, and especially in the fact that this duality has created all kinds of conflicts between genders, between different peoples, different races, etc., because the dualistic perception is what has created these conflicts. We have projected an internal duality onto the world outside, and unfortunately then we have to a large extent acted accordingly, as if this duality is the reality. And in fact, it's just one of the different waves, it's just one of the different possibilities that we may create resonance with.
And that's the key right there, is which one are we resonating with?
Yes.
as these waves sort of flow over the planet, flow over the people.
Yeah.
Which one is resonating with you? What is it that you want out of life? What kind of reality, as the phrase goes, what kind of reality do you want to create? And you know, it's one of those interesting frustrations for some. And I remember, and I look back and I laugh now, but I remember I was dead serious about this when I was working for the Christian radio station. I was hearing all of the prophecies and all of the end time stuff and so on and so forth. And I thought, I used to say, well, okay, is there something that I can do to help bring about this whole thing so that we can kind of move on beyond it? It's like, because I had only been hearing it for 15 years. I know there are people that have been saying it for several decades, you know, half their life, if not their entire lives, from you know, the pulpit and so forth. And here I am only, you know, hearing it for 15 years. And I'm going, how can I make this thing move along here? Because it just seems like we've been hearing the same message, you know, well, for 2,000 years. And that was one of the things that always struck me was the illogic of some of the positions, the doctrines, if you will, the beliefs and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I finally came to a place where I was actually, it took me 5 months for me to work through and let go of the concept of hell. Because every time which meant I also had to let go of the concept of heaven as well. You can't have one without the other in the theology.
Right.
But then I also began to realize, well, wait a minute. If God, and whatever the concept might be, created everything, then God also created this being, this literal being called Lucifer, we call the devil or Satan. So all of this is on God, you know, because God created it all. So where's my responsibility in all of this? Because God created it all. As a matter of fact, I was sharing this with someone a long time ago about, you know, the day of judgment. You know, I'm going to die one day, and based upon the theology, I'm going to stand before God, judgment day, and I'm going to answer for my life. And on the one hand, I'm going to say, look, yes, you created me, and I'm 100% responsible. I did the best I could with what I had, and if it doesn't measure up, well, you know, you're going to do with me what you're going to do with me. But then I said, the reality is, this is on you, because you created me, and the world that you put me in, ergo, deal with it, you know, and I walk away. So if I buy into the theology, there's nothing I can do anyway. There's no explanation that I can give that's going to get me out of the hole that supposedly I may end up in. So I'm going to do the best I can while I'm here, consciously trying to make this a better place, not just for me, not just for you, Carl, not just for my wife and the animals that we have, but for every human being on the planet.
Yes.
Nobody can be left out. And I think that that's one of the sad residual effects of the dualism, is that there are those who are, you said the sixth wave, and they're really buying into it. And there isn't room for everybody. I've often found the sad fact that there are those who do not live the life that gives them the right to enter a church, when in fact the church is supposed to be for those sinners.
Yes.
You know, and so of course, that's going back into the duality. And yet I'm sitting here going, wait a minute, this is all part of the same situation with the ninth wave. And that's another thing, too, is even though you say the ninth wave was activated, what did you say, in 1999?
No, the ninth wave was activated already as recently as 2011.
2011. But there have been people in parts of the world down through the centuries who have been in that mindset already, who have been sharing with us we'll call it the unity message, that we're all one. You know, we have Jesus, and we have Buddha, and we have Gandhi, and songwriters like John Denver. I mean, and yet they didn't wait for the ninth wave. For whatever reason and however that happened, they were already there, realizing that it's all or none. We've got to work this out.
Yeah, I can imagine that there are a few exceptions from the overall process, but on a massive scale, you know, I think the explanation to why the teachings of certain saints or prophets like that they have not been followed, the teachings, is really that on the larger scale it has been the dualist mind that have dominated.
Yes.
And so whatever churches or organizations that have been created to support a certain religious teaching, those on a massive scale, they have been still been dominated by the duality that's been dominating in their times. And so it's been in the past, it's been probably a few individuals that you're saying. That's my perception, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't been, it's not been possible on a massive scale.
Exactly.
Or it hasn't manifested.
Yeah. So let me ask you, Carl, at what point in your life did this begin to inculcate your soul that I need to investigate this,
mm-hmm.
I need to research this, and then you began to find this information, and obviously it resonated with you, and here you are today. So what was the was there a catalytic moment, or did you just come out of the womb knowing?
No, I can tell you that was not the case. But I do experience it as if I'm born with a particular mission, and the mission, you might say, is to make sense of the Mayan calendar in such a way that it becomes meaningful for people living in our own time. But it wasn't like it's been a stepwise process. I truly became aware of this mission, if you will, when I was 29. I'm 65 now. When I was 29 and went on a backpacking trip to Mexico and Guatemala. But that was just a sort of a feeling, wow, this is something here that it's very profound, and I really connected to these peoples and were fascinated by the ancient calendrical system that I first encountered. But then it took quite some time, because I was working then as a scientist, as a toxicologist in the laboratory, and it took me, I think, 13 years after that point until I had the audacity to actually leave that career that I had and devote myself full time. But there came a point when I decided, okay, I'll just which is about 20, 25 years ago or something like that, when I just decided I'll do that, do this, and then I hope things will work out for me. And it has, but it's been an ongoing deepening ever since I took that step and sort of burnt my ships and not having the chance to go back, essentially, to the kind of career that I used to have. And it's been deepening since then, and it's just more and more aspects that have come into it, and here I am now. And I just feel very, very fortunate for the very fact that I still feel that I have something special to say, that there's still something to do with my mission, and enjoy sharing that with other people, and having other people share what they're coming from, and how it now is sort of increasingly fitting in. We're increasingly seeing all of our commonalities, despite our varied backgrounds and so. But it wasn't like, you know, sometimes you hear people that, you know, it's like they've been hit by lightning and their whole life changes and so forth. I guess I wasn't that brave in 1979. I still wanted a job as long as I could. And then it came a point when I felt, no, you know, this is what I'm supposed to do, and I started doing it.
Well, I'm glad you are, because we need as many voices out there as possible. I think that's going to help as well in terms of helping people to resonate with the respective waves that are washing over us and help us to understand. I mean, this program is here to provide information. We say we put out a smorgasbord, and you come, you take what you want, leave the rest, and if it works for you, if it resonates for you with you, then wonderful. Then run with it and make it work for yourself and in your life and in your family and in your community, however broad you want to take that. And I mean, we've been doing this program for nearly 8 years, and it's just it's been extraordinary, the folks that we've come across, yourself included, who have come across the kinds of information, such as you, that, you know, you're not throwing out predictions, you're not throwing out specific ways. What you're saying is that, and this is pretty much standard throughout many of the some of the top names of people that seem to be at the forefront of the consciousness movement, that this isn't about giving you a specific directive as to the kind of mindset that you should have.
No.
The kind of path that you should follow.
No.
This is saying it's out there, and it is going to affect you. It's like the words we've spoken in this program to someone who has listened from the beginning. You have heard it. You can't unhear it. So now you're going to have to, in one way or the other, deal with the concepts that have been put forth, if not today, tomorrow, but someday. And we hope in a very positive way. This is, it's not a threat. I mean, it's just the reality of things. That it's like we breathe the air in and out, you know, and you're going to breathe in the molecules of people's past and present. That's just the reality. You can't get around that. You can't filter out the old molecular structure. It's all there. So this wave is there. And by the way, I wanted to ask you in that regard, because I was very much conscious of the events that took place in 1989. How does this relate to the harmonic conversions of that time?
The harmonic convergence, you might say, it started... These waves I've been talking about, they have certain activation points, but they are preceded by what you might call pre-waves. They are a similar wave that sort of is activated in a weaker form, but that sort of prepares the ground for what comes later. And the harmonic convergence that was in August 17, 1987, it was the beginning of the pre-wave that later was activated in 1999. So it was a significant shift and sort of opening up to a new form of spirituality that had not been downloaded for quite some time before that. It sort of opened up for the beginning of the return in several steps to unity consciousness. So it's that's what it is. It was indeed a significant opening, new opening, a new shift, a new aspect of the mind could be downloaded at that particular point in time.
I know that December 21st, 2012 was also a significant day, and especially relating to the Mayan calendar, but it was not an external event. And yet, I would tell people to look back 12 years, and I would ask them, what happened? What happened in regards to Y2K? And they'll say, well, nothing. That's exactly what's going to happen on December 21st, 2012. On from an external perspective, it's an internal process. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's an internal transformation if you choose to open yourself up to it.
Yeah.
So that's one of, and I think also many of the main religions, somehow they diverted us away from that fact. I remember interviewing a gentleman back in the late 1980s. I actually interviewed him a number of times, and he had written a book that I was enthralled with. At that time, it was the first book that I had read cover to cover because it so enthralled me. Of all of the people I was interviewing at the time, his was the one that just it jumped out at me. So I began to do the same research he did in the books that I had to make his information mine so I wouldn't keep quoting him. But what he found in his research, as I found, was that from the ancient writings, from the Bible, it was all an internal process.
Yeah.
There was nothing external about it. It would affect your external life.
Yes.
But it wasn't like, you know, tomorrow is the rapture and you and I are going to be caught up in the sky. That wasn't going to happen. That was an internal process.
Right. Right. And that's exactly what this kind of way of looking at history from the Mayan calendar perspective is telling us. There are periods when a new mind is activated. But what happens when the new mind is activated is that our inner self is being changed. And as that inner change is being changed, or we tend to create a different external world. It's a secondary, as within, so without. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly what you're saying as well. And the reason I would say that the Mayan calendar is indeed prophetic, and that there is some kind of a basis for prophecy, generally speaking, is that there is a specific timing for this inner shift that later, with some delay, is manifested in our external reality, in the kind of world that we're creating outside of ourselves.
I'm also curious, real quick here, if you can, before we wrap up the program, I'm curious, even though, you know, with what we said withstanding, what about something I've heard about the rewriting of the genetic information in our own DNA as far as the spiritual evolution then impacting and affecting the physical evolution of the human being?
Yeah. I'm a doctor of biology, so I have thought about these matters, and I did write a book a couple of years ago that was very appreciated, but it has a limited circulation. It was called The Purposeful Universe, and what that book dealt with was how the four lowest waves of the Mayan calendar system, how it is those waves that actually have brought into existence the kind of species that we are. And in other words, that yes, it's an evolutionary process, but it's a purposeful process. It's a directed process, and the purpose of this universe is to create life, and the purpose of evolution on our planet is to create human beings. And so I dealt with this thing. Now, I don't believe personally, and I argue strongly in this book about that the activation of DNA is that there is some kind of a change in DNA going on. I think at the current time, especially, the change is spiritual and mental. And but of course, when we undergo this kind of spiritual change and opening, then we will have to, our bodies have to adapt to it. And but I don't think, you know, and it would lead too far to give my view of this, but I don't think that there is a change in our DNA code taking place. But you hear it a lot out there, and it's just my view, and I have arguments that that is not happening.
Right, and I do understand that. I've also learned too that we're not talking about DNA is not, you know, necessarily the cells of the body. It's just a string of information that makes us who and what we are.
Yes,
and our ancestors give us that, and our ancestors are scattered quite literally across the globe, depending upon how far back you want to go. I mean, that's the most interesting thing. I mean, if and I've always found that frustrating whenever I kept hearing on the news when I was growing up about these different conflicts. Boy, if we could just get that message to these people that are fighting, that look, you guys, look, when you cut yourselves, you both bleed the same red blood.
Yeah.
Maybe a different type, but it's still the same red blood. And the DNA, if we were to be able to research it, I mean, we couldn't go very far with it back in the 70s, 60s and 70s, yeah. Like we can today. But if we were to be able to research it and delve into that, we'd find out that we're all made from the same DNA stuff. You know, that information is all. And but, you know, we continue to play around and fight and cause all kinds of problems and live in the dualistic world, which, again, the hardest thing even for me to do is to sit back and say, and these people, these human beings, they have every right to live their lives the way they want. I can't stop them anyway. You know, they've made their choices and we've made ours. And so here we are today. Yeah. Before we wrap up the program, I certainly do want to thank you for sharing so much time with us here on the program. And I offer an invitation that if you find yourself drifting away from Santa Fe, where you live, out here to Santa Barbara, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Great. Thank you so much. It's been a great discussion, I think. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Before I let you go, three final questions. Who is Carl Johan Kallman?
It's a spark of light. Okay.
Mm-hmm. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I want to be part of showing people the possibility that now exists of redirecting the destiny of humanity towards unity consciousness.
And who inspires you?
The divine.
We've been talking with Carl Johan Kallman. He is a PhD in physical biology from the University of Stockholm. He has several books out, including the one we've been touching upon here, which has to do with the global mind and the global mind and the rise of civilization, the quantum evolution of consciousness. He has also written The Mayan Calendar and A Transition and the Transition of Consciousness, as well as a book he also referenced, The Purposeful Universe. And I would love to continue this conversation at another time. This is just fascinating. And I'm hoping that people will go to your website. Website is Kallman, Kallman.com. That is the web address. We will be linked to it. And read more of his articles, read more about the ninth wave and all of this information. Didn't even have an opportunity to get into the physical aspects of it. I was actually pulling up this 7 or 8 month span here in 2015. That shows these different aspects of the day and the night and midday and so forth, and maybe dissecting that a little bit and defining some of the terms. But I think we'll have to save that for another time. And I do thank you again for sharing your time with us.
Thank you so much, Richard. I really enjoyed it.
Once again, it's Kallman.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.